All right, so you'll hold it like this. Wilbur, my dog loves feminine energy. He loves it. Just testing the sound. Wilbur, you look really happy. I swear to God, one day I'm going to take him to a drag show and he's just going to have a flipping ball. That coffee is not for you, Wilbur. He kind of is one, honestly. I was telling one of my friends, Wilbur loves mommy dogs. He only likes gay men, women, and gender fluid people. Very rarely does he like straight men. He loves milk and he doesn't like golden retrievers. I was telling my best friend from college, Brian, and Brian was like, yeah, Wilbur's a gay dog page.
He's funny. Wilbur's funny. I know a lot of students on my campus. They have dogs or cats. Like, I know one girl. Her cat only likes men, does not like women at all. It's so funny.
Further proof that cats are evil. I'm sorry if you like them. Wilbur's trying to kiss my guest.
I do not know what to do with a dog. I'm not an animal person.
You just hug and love them.
Yeah, but like, I don't know.
I'm sorry, I don't think you have a choice. I think he loves you.
Yeah, I can tell. He doesn't really like me. Well, he definitely ain't going anywhere.
Hey everyone, I'm here at South by Southwest. Went to a music show last night where I met the amazing drag queen, Raleigh Saffron. Raleigh was dressed to the nines in this amazing outfit, very fashionable, by far the coolest person there. Went up to her, started talking, and she was interested in appearing on my podcast. So, welcome to my podcast, Raleigh.
Thank you. Happy to be here. And thank you for having me here. That was a really fun show to be at. Unfortunately, I was super tired. So like after I met you, I left like 10 minutes later. I went to my hotel room and I passed out.
Wilbur, we got a serious interview off my couch. Okay, whatever. Wilbur, this is not a treat party for you. Yeah, okay, we can play after. I did not go home after that concert. I actually went out with a bunch of guys in crypto. That was interesting. God, those guys know how to party. I'll just say that. I was like, wow, these guys are in their 40s. They're just doing shots. They're at the bar. I was like, I'm gonna go home, everybody. That was fun. So we are here drinking coffee, trying to get it together, trying to be awake. So let's just start. Tell me your story. How did you become a drag queen?
My first witness of drag, I guess you could say, was Drag Race. I think it was All Stars 3. It was my first time actually seeing the show. And it was a very interesting experience because I was like, oh, this is cool. This is nice. But I wasn't like going crazy for it. I was like, this is nice. This is fun. I love the art. But I am a college student. My college, at the beginning of every school year, they do a drag show for campus. I was lucky that it was an outdoor event and it was right outside my dorm. I just saw it, and that's where I fell in love. I fell in love watching it live. I love the local drag, and that's what made me fall in love with it. So, spending a year learning more about drag, more about the culture, more about what it takes to be a drag queen. And next year came around, the next showcase, my second year, and I went up to the local queen who books all the shows, and I said, "Hey, I want to start doing drag. Can I get a show?" She said, "Yes." The rest is history.
How old were you when you started exploring drag?
Back during the pandemic, for example, I started experimenting with makeup. So you could say back when I was probably 17 or 18. And then I was 19 when I started doing drag. So when I was 18 to 19, my freshman year of college, that's when I was trying to play with makeup, play with outfits, try to develop my character and spend the time to really understand what I wanted out of who my drag character was.
And just to take a step back, just for my audience, can you define what a drag queen is? And also, usually I do some maintenance questions about these subjects. Let's just get them out of the way. So I'm going to ask you a few questions on what certain terms are, what they mean, and just tell me what they are. So, what is a drag queen? What does that term mean?
Drag queen is whatever you think of it to be. So for me, drag queen is an art form to experiment and be your hyper self, which can be crazy makeup, crazy performance. It can be anything you want it to be. A lot of people also view drag as just a heightened state in mind almost. Like if you're a very introverted person and you're like, I have to do this whole speech in front of a room of 100 people. Let me get my drag energy on. Just have the confidence to really carry yourself. Drag queen is more of that heightened self playing with femininity. There can be some masculinity, like a drag king. Drag king is focuses on masculinity, but a drag queen focuses a little more on the femininity side of gender, playing with those gender roles.
All right. Can you define the terms cisgender, trans, gender fluid, and any other ones that I might be missing you feel like are important?
So cisgender is what you're assigned at birth. Trans is the opposite of cisgender, where you don't identify under the same as what you were assigned at birth. So, for example, people who are gender fluid like I am out of drag, I am considered under the trans umbrella, which trans is different from transgender. Because trans is just being trans in the sense of not identifying as what you're assigned at birth, versus transgender, where it's more of a community, people who do a full transition from male to female, you know, doing hormone therapy, plastic surgery likely for some people, breast reduction, you know, there's a wide range under that. But I think the main thing to kind of talk about is also the difference between gender and sex. Gender is how you identify versus sex, which is what you are assigned at birth. So that's always the biggest conversation I ever have when it comes to the conversation of gender is just an identity versus sex is what your body naturally is.
Okay, noted. Why can't we come up with a prettier term than cisgender? Every time I hear it, I'm like, that's kind of gross. That sounds like a syndrome. I don't want to be cisgender. I want to be like princess. I don't care how people identify. I don't want to be cisgender. If I don't want to take part in those kinds of labels, if I just want to say, hey, I'm a woman, I use she, her, am I being transphobic?
No. If you say this is how I identify, that's how you identify. And saying you are cis or AFAB, which do mean the same thing, that's not being transphobic. Being transphobic is the actions you do and the things you do say to trans people and trying to suppress them and put them down. And you're not doing that. Heck, you're probably uplifting when you say you are a woman.
Okay, interesting. So what are pronouns? I mean, we all know what pronouns are, but when you talk about pronouns and how we should use them in the trans context, can you describe that to me?
I mean, we all learned pronouns back in elementary school, and it's just basically just how you refer to someone, how someone likes to be referred to as. And with trans people, it is extremely important to them because they grew up being referred to as a he, him. But as they got older and realized they're transgender, they want to be referred to as she, her. And it becomes this thing of wanting to be respected as the person you feel like you actually are on the inside. So like for me, I'm very thankful I identify as gender fluid and feel very gender fluid because I don't really worry about pronouns. Hell, I actually laugh when people stumble on pronouns. Trans people view pronouns as a sign of respect with just using the simple pronouns that they prefer. Anyone under the trans umbrella, non-binary, gender fluid.
What's the best way to know what someone's pronouns are? Should I ask them directly? Should I say, my name is Paige, my pronouns are she, her, I'm a woman, it's okay if you want to refer to me as princess, that's fine too. Is that what I should do? Or, you know, if I meet someone and I suspect they might be gender fluid, should I just ask them directly? Then what would be the most respectful way to go about that?
When it comes to the conversation of meeting someone you don't know their pronouns, first off, take a look at the space you're at. Is it a very welcoming space? Is it a very neutral space or a very safe space for trans people? And that's when you can ask, like, hey, by the way, just wanted to ask, like, what are your pronouns? And if you don't know someone's pronouns, it's always safe to just go with they, them. Just because that is gender neutral and it is the best way to not offend someone, that is something for them to say at their own time. Coming out as transgender to someone every day is very exhausting, and sometimes you just don't want to. Sometimes you want to be only viewed as a woman, another human body on earth. That's kind of just how people want to be viewed. So when it comes to people talking about their identity, that's something more so to have them share, but pronouns, if you're in a safe space to ask that question, would always encourage it. Otherwise, just stick to they, them if you really do not understand.
So I've heard this term thrown around a little bit, and I want to know, what is dead naming, and how bad is it really?
Dead naming is a very serious thing. So dead naming is using someone's old name, like transgender. The name they're assigned at birth, and they transition, and they get a new name. That name they were assigned at birth is a dead name. Dead naming someone is one of the most disrespectful things you could do to a trans person, because that's their past. That's how they used to identify. But now they're this whole other person that they know they are and they feel is them. So when you bring up their history and their old name, when you bring that up, it can be a lot for that person. And it's a very disrespectful thing to do.
All right, saying someone's dead name over and over when they've told you how they want to be identified is obviously harassment. What about if someone just slips up? Let's say I have a friend and they have transitioned recently. They changed their name. They've changed their pronouns. I've known them for a long time, and maybe accidentally during conversation, I accidentally use their old pronouns or their old name. I'm not speaking from experience or anything. If someone slips up and makes a mistake and says the wrong pronoun or the wrong name, what should they do next?
The big thing you want to do is not make a big deal out of it. If you mess up, apologize and just correct yourself and move on. Because people don't want it kind of like shoved in their face, like, oh my God, I feel so bad. They just want to know you were wrong and that you fixed it. That's simply all it is. When it comes to a long-term friend, it is not only a transition for them, it is a transition for the people around them that have been very close with them. And not only does a transgender person need time to understand their new identity and their new body and their whole new life, but so do the people around them. Time to adapt and understand and learn more about the person that they are becoming. It's kind of like when you have a friend in high school and then you go back to the high school for the school reunion and you're catching up with them that entire time because you hadn't seen them once. They tell you they're trans, this is their new identity.
Very tempting to ask you right now how you feel about J.K. Rowling. I'm not going to do that.
I know nothing about J.K. Rowling. I was real young when that all happened. I didn't learn about it when I was younger. I have not read back on the whole situation, so I know nothing about it.
Okay, so speaking about when you were younger, what was your childhood like? When did you learn what your identity was, and how do you feel about this question?
Let me start off with how I feel about the question. It's important to know how people grew up and how some of the experience they have when they're even like 2, 3, 4 years old can impact someone so much when they're in their 20s, 30s, even 50s. Your childhood's had such a big impact, so it's important to learn and understand that history. But my childhood, so I have 5 older brothers, and so I grew up in a house full of guys, and my parents always joked, like, one of them's gonna be gay. My mom kind of knew I was the gay one. My dad, he was in on the joke, but he didn't think it was actually true. So when I came out, which would have been, I think, 2016 as gay, my mom was very accepting, and my dad, not as accepting at first. My dad, he was like, that's fine. I just need to warm up to it. I was very open to that. I grew up in small town Marietta, Ohio, on the Ohio River in the countries of Appalachia. I also didn't grow up with any gay people. I grew up by myself. I'm not a big TV, movie, media person like that. So I also didn't have any representation for me to look at. I just viewed myself as my own representation. And I'm very happy about that because it makes me feel like such a stronger person to be myself and really feel like I can fly my colors without questioning, because I am my biggest supporter, and that's all that matters. If I'm not my first person, then no one can be my first person. You have to support yourself before others can. You have to love yourself before others can love you, you know.
So it sounds like even though you were in, as we talked about at the concert, Redneck America, sounds like your family was, for the most part, pretty accepting. Is that accurate?
My close family, yes. I should emphasize that. My close family, yeah. Everyone was pretty either fully accepted me or were willing to accept me. They just needed time. My distant family, on the other hand, they were not accepting at all. They would still let me be around, but they didn't talk to me as much. They didn't really want me in the conversations. They discredited anything I said. But that also came with just understanding, this is what homophobia is. This is what I don't want for my future. This is something no one should be dealing with. No one should be the outcast of the family. And I wouldn't be around that. So I'm not really around for that side of the family anymore because they still have issues with accepting me. I still do my part as a family member and help support them. I still do love them. I still appreciate the lessons I got out of their homophobia. And thankfully, some of them was willing to learn and be open-minded. And those that weren't, I don't keep them a part of my life. I don't want to keep someone part of my life that isn't going to support me and what I love and who I am.
I really like that. So let's say I'm a parent and I have a young child who comes out and says, "Mom, I want to be a boy," or "I think I'm a boy," or "I think I'm this or that," or "I identify as something else." I'm a parent. I'm just trying to make it in this world with my young child. I might be a little overwhelmed. What are some things you would say to me to help me adjust and to support my child as they develop their identity?
First thing I would say to a parent is just breathe. Yes, you raised a little child the way society kind of told you to raise them, how you were raised almost. But it's also the thing of understanding everyone is different. Everyone grows up differently. There's no two people the same. Everyone is different and has their own views about life and how they really are. So to parents, I always say listen to your child. Listen to what they're saying. And if you don't understand something, just say, "Hey, I'm not well versed in the LGBT plus community. However, what I will do to help support you is I will educate myself." There are a lot of resources available out there to help people understand. So you could look into your local community and try and find these LGBT plus resources that are available. There are LGBT centers all around the United States that focus on this to help people. I know here in Austin, Texas, I got to meet the Kind Clinic, where they do have these conversations with parents who do have a trans kid or a gay kid, and they're trying to understand it, and they just can't wrap their head around it. There are resources and people out there to help parents understand, and we have Google. You can Google something and look at resources. The Human Rights Campaign is a good place to go. I would recommend the LGBT plus FanWiki. It's a website where it has a lot of definitions, flags, and history.
This is the only time I'll ask this because I want the story to be more about being a drag queen and redneck America and just all of the things that you have to go through on a day-to-day basis. I have to ask, if I'm a parent and my child wants to identify as a different gender, and I'm happy to let them do that, but I don't want them to receive medication or things that would permanently alter them, like on their life trajectory, is that homophobic? So like, let's say I have a biological daughter. She says, "Mom, I'm a boy. I want to dress up as a boy." I'm like, "Okay, that's great. I just don't want to give you medication that changes your gender." Am I being homophobic or transphobic? Yeah, okay, got the term right.
Yeah, I was going to correct you there. You caught it yourself. So first, I want to first start on the medication part. Hormone therapy is not a permanent thing, actually. If you take hormone medication, it is not actually a permanent thing. It is actually a reversible thing just by getting off the pill. So that is more of a thing of the parent not being well educated and not talking to doctors about hormone therapy. And you want to make sure when you are talking to a doctor, you talk to a doctor who is specialized. There are doctors who don't specialize in it, and they will say it is permanent, but that's because they don't specialize in it. Typically, that's also a doctor who is more anti-hormone therapy. So it's more of listen to specialized doctors that focus on hormone therapy. Be open to that conversation and learn about it. If you're not comfortable with your child starting it when they first come out, still be open to doing that research and meeting doctors, learning about it, and just say, "Hey, look, we want to support you, but we don't have the money to afford it." But taking the steps to actually learn about it along with your child, that's important. And that's what you should do.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm going to ask about that during this whole conversation. What advice would you give to a child currently struggling with gender identity issues? Maybe they don't have supportive parents. Maybe their parents are transphobic. Even just home, maybe their parents are just phobic. Maybe their parents are far right, red steak every day. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, I live in Texas, so tell me, what advice would you give to that child?
find your chosen family. Your chosen family are the people that support you and love you no matter what and who you are, versus your actual biological family, where they love you because you are family. And that's where it stops. Your chosen family loves you because you're you. Trying to find that is very important. And you can find chosen families in person. If you live in a big city, it's really easy to find that community. Again, do your research trying to find local LGBT resources and figuring that out. Find the LGBT spots if you are of age.
Yeah, I advocate for finding your people in person. Does that sound right? Finding your people in person. All right, neat. So tell me, what's it like being a drag queen? Like, what happens? Just tell me.
Duct tape, hairspray, and a lot of desperation.
Oh my god!
First off, if you want to be a drag queen, don't. Because, first off, you're not making any money off of doing drag. You make no money off of it. It's more of just a self-expression type thing. And especially nowadays in our political climate, it's a lot more being leaders and a pillar in the community too. So first off, if you're not willing to be that, I would not recommend being a drag artist. But really, like, for me, when I'm doing drag, I'm spending 2 to 3 hours on doing makeup, taping my body and contorting it to have that hourglass shape, getting in these glamorous outfits and wigs. It looks super pretty, but it is painful just contorting your body.
How many drag shows do you do a month? Also, what's a drag show?
So a drag show, start there, is a show where there are obviously drag artists performing. So that can be a roast, where you have drag artists not insulting, but like reading each other. It's an insult, but funny. You can laugh at it, and it's not offensive, and it's not taken to heart. It's more of a joke. But the drag shows I do, they are performance-based. So it's lip-syncing to music like Kylie Minogue, Britney Spears, Ariana Grande, kind of like those pop divas for the gay community. Lip-sync to them. I dance a lot. I'm kind of the dancing queen of where I'm at. And it's a very small community, so I know I am the dancing queen of where I'm at. The drag show, it's always fun and entertaining. As for the number of shows I do a month, obviously it's going to depend on the month. So it could be anywhere between 1 show a month to 6 shows a month. It really depends on the month. Pride month, for example, that's my busy season.
So you're the dancing queen. What songs do you like to dance to?
That's a hard one. I don't really actually repeat songs very often.
Stop the record. So you come up with new dances and new choreographies and new songs? What? What? Oh my god, what? I can barely keep my morning routine straight.
It's a thing of I wear a lot of the same outfits because I don't want to spend like $100 a month on a new outfit. Hell, probably more like $300 a month. So I try to change numbers more often than outfits.
What's the community of drag queens like? Is everyone pretty friendly? Are they competitive? Can you tell me about that?
That is going to depend on the scene you're in. My scene, for example, we all love each other. We're all very close with each other. We all respect each other. But if you go to a big city, it's a lot more competitive. It's a lot more cutthroat, you could say. Every drag queen has a signature number. Every drag queen does. If you go to a new town as a performer and you perform that number, that queen at her home bar is going to ban you forever from her home bar.
What?
That's the thing. People don't realize drag queens are rotted. Rotted. We are rotted. We are rotted.
Well, thanks for being so nice to me. So if I perform, let's say I'm just like having a bar, if I'm dancing to a song that a drag queen sees as her song, she's going to ban me and hate me for the rest of my life.
Especially if it's at her home bar in her hometown, she will likely not like you. It's very likely. Every queen is different. I mean, a lot of people do drag because they love the attention. I do drag because I enjoy seeing my audience happy and forgetting about the day-to-day life of what is going on. I would recommend learning about the local queens and what they do. There are some queens where they say, if you're the new girl in town, you can perform anything, and there's no question about it. But there's a lot of queens that are like, if you perform any of my go-to numbers, you're gone forever.
What happens when you get exiled from the drag community?
That will stick to you. Some people will share their experience with other people around. However, if it's a thing with just doing someone else's signature number, that's fine. That's not going to get shared around. That's just a petty thing. But if you, for example, do something that was just not okay to the community, that will be carried with you where you go, and it'll follow you. So really, what the best thing to do is to work on yourself, before getting back in the community and showing this is how I fixed myself.
Very interesting. That makes me wonder, how do you feel about the LGBTQ community as a whole? Do you feel included?
It's always going to depend on the people you surround yourself with. There are people in the community, they want the spotlight on them and not anyone else. So with that, you can find groups of people that aren't going to like you and aren't going to make you feel included. There are people that will welcome you with open arms, and those are the people that actually do matter. Now, as a whole, in the LGBT plus community, like online and in media, for example, as a gay man, yeah, I'm represented. I'm white also, so like I'm well represented. But as a gender fluid person, I'm not really well represented. Trans people are still getting introduced and normalized in media. With everything going out with bans and legislation and all that jazz, a lot of companies and a lot of TV shows, they're just not willing to risk having a trans person on just because of their fans' views and biases. So trans people are still being slowly introduced into the space. And when it comes to specifically doing gender fluid representation, it's hard to get every single person in the community, which I understand. Overall, yes, I feel welcomed, I feel accepted, and I feel like I do have a space to speak my mind, share my story, and help other people, especially where I live. But on social media, it's people feel a lot more open to speaking their two cents when they probably shouldn't.
Yeah, speaking of just speaking in general, we could talk about the internet and how things are going on the internet. Oh, we could talk about something fun, like Drag Queen Story Hour. Tell me, I see these sometimes in the news. What is Drag Queen Story Hour, and why do some people on the internet get so angry about it?
Drag Queen Story Hour. That is basically a drag queen going to a library and reading to kids. Just reading a book in full drag. Which, when you are doing that, I should emphasize, you're dressing very conservatively and cartoony. It's a mix of, yeah, a mix of conservative and cartoony. Because that's what kids love. They love animated. They love cartoons. They love the glitz and glamour and the extraness of a drag queen. They love it. But a lot of drag is not for kids. A lot of it is 18 and up. So a lot of people think that drag artists that are reading to kids, they're in these sexy outfits. But they're really not. They're fully covered in cartoony outfits and there to have fun. A lot of people that want to really teach kids about being inclusive to other people, to not be racist, to not be homophobic, to not be hateful as a whole. Because, again, we're all human beings. We're all people. We all mess up. We all are our own individual. And yes, we might not agree with how other people live. There's people I don't agree with how they live. And there's people that don't agree with how I live. But at the same time, I'm not going to tell them how to live their life because you chose that. You chose how to live your life. Let me choose how I want to live my life. And how some drag queens want to choose to live their life is by teaching children to be accepting of other people, because we're stronger when we're in all these crazy groups.
What happens when we can't express ourselves? What happens to people when they are not able to express who they truly believe they are?
Trigger warning. It's a lot of depression, a lot of suicide. That's what it is. When people are in a conservative home and they know that they can't express themselves and they've learned that they can't, a lot of them take their lives because they feel like that's what life is. And it's not, obviously. But that's what happened. People aren't happy. I mean, think. If you can't express how you feel, what feels right, how can you? How can you be happy when you're not yourself?
Do you feel like you're yourself right now?
Yes. I am always my authentic self, regardless of the day and time. I will always wear a shawl, a cardigan, because that's just my simple way of feeling myself and my true self. It's weird how a simple piece of clothing can make myself feel confident, but everyone should always feel like they can be themselves, no matter what situation they're in. That's how I carry myself, and if I'm not being my true self, I know I'm not going to be happy, so why should I not?
I'm in Texas. Quite a few laws are being passed where children can be taken away from their parents because they are trans. For my listeners, regardless of how you feel about this specific topic, taking away children from their parents, generally awful, not a good thing. Court system is not a good place for children. How can someone be an ally to trans youth, especially in Texas?
It's like I said earlier, know your resources, know what's available in Texas. I mean, here in Austin, there's Kind Clinic. Understanding that resourcing and knowing what's available online, that's how you be a true ally. But when it comes to what's going on here in Texas, it is awful. Kids taken away from their families because their parents are supportive of their child and they love them. That's awful. And to get more on the political side, we have separation of church and state for a reason. When it comes to these families, it's so hard because you don't want to move away from Texas because you love it. This is where you have your friends, your family. Texas feels like home. And when your home is attacking you, it's hard to leave. In my view, sometimes when it's a fight you know you cannot win and you feel like you're going to have to risk your own safety, sometimes, especially when you're threatened with your kids being taken away, that's a situation where I would just encourage like supporting from the outside. Leave Texas to go support your kid how you feel like you want to and support the community outside of Texas. Sometimes you have to put yourself and your family first.
Interesting. That was a very long way of saying get out of Texas.
Again, if you have family and your kid is being threatened to be taken away from you, I would encourage it. I would encourage that option. There are more options than just leaving, staying for the fight. But at the same time, there are parents that are exhausted, too tired to have that fight. Sometimes you just can't handle that fight and you just have to put you and your family first. Now, for people here in Texas and are like, I don't want to move and this is my home and I'm not going away. And kudos to you. Like, I am in Ohio and Ohio is very anti-LGBT. When you're the state that people reference for your hate laws, even countries are referencing Texas. Ohio is Texas's little brother. Ohio just does what Texas does, but on a lesser scale almost. There's a territory in Canada that's taking a page out of Texas's book. There are other countries that are looking at what Texas is doing. And there's a lot of countries that look at America, see what's happening, and they do that. Basically, if you really want to support the fight for LGBT rights, talk to your legislation, talk to your representatives, learn about the resources, go protest, let your voice be heard. That's all you can do. And let your voice represent what you stand for. I understand there's no one candidate that's going to fit every single area. So making a priority list and going through that through your representatives, because this is the year of voting. We're voting a new president. We're voting on president. We're voting for the Senate. We're voting for every part of the branch this year in D.C. Let your vote represent what matters to you most.
Many questions I want to ask you about politics. I'm not going to because we're having an enjoyable morning with coffee and whipped cream and my dog. Just gonna ask you, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, why are people so willing to bully and be unkind and harass people that are different? Why do people hate what they don't understand?
I could spend 2 hours just answering that question. My biggest thought, because sometimes I don't even understand, but the media thing I think of is fear. If you don't understand something, you don't know it, you're kind of scared. Your first reaction is to be scared. So people not understanding and they're not willing to put in the work. For example, if you grew up very religious, you learned what the Bible is, stick to that. You feel like it's law. That's kind of your upbringing. And when you get introduced to these things that you were taught are not okay, you get scared because you don't know it. You just know it's not okay. So it's kind of a thing of ignorance, of not willing to put in the work to understand. Learn and listen to these people. All you know is fear. But that's how people were raised. So when someone comes to me and says, I don't understand. I don't understand why you do it. I don't understand why you choose to do it. I'm like, it's not a choice. And I try to be a little educational. By the end of the day, I also know people aren't willing to have an educational discussion. They're more so telling me they don't agree with what I'm doing and I should stop. And I won't stop because I'm not going to be what they think I should be. I don't know them. But it typically comes to some form of fear. Now, when it comes to our legislation, politics of it all, again, it's a lot of religion, not understanding, but it's also a lot of buying out. There's a lot of companies that don't like LGBT plus people because of whatever reason, and they will pay politicians for their vote to support these things. People hate what they don't know just because of not understanding and not willing to understand.
All right. Well, we are coming up on time. Just one final question. What's the most joyful part about being a drag queen?
It's seeing other people's reaction. It's seeing the crowd forget about everything we just talked about. Everything that we've talked about in this entire podcast. It's forgetting about that. Forgetting about life and just enjoying the moment. Seeing people enjoy the show. Enjoy the moment and the safe community that we have at that time in the audience. While I'm on stage dancing in beautiful outfits, having a fun time myself, seeing the crowd have fun. It is the best part of drag. Why I will continue to do drag.
Tell me about your favorite outfit. Just describe it.
That's hard. My last name is Saffron. My last name in drag is Saffron. So obviously I take a lot of inspiration from the flower Saffron, which is a purple flower and a red spice. So I have an outfit. It is a purple caftan with gold beading and a red cape with a red wig and a stoned front. It is absolutely beautiful. I actually have not worn it as of recording, but I will be wearing it here soon. It is probably my favorite outfit. But as of what I have worn as of now, I have a purple fringe stoned dance costume. It is absolutely beautiful. However, I hate how they made it because they just super hot glued the fringe to the dress. So I had to go through and sew all of it back on. But I still love that outfit.
What's your favorite song to dance to right now?
I mean, I'll forever love my signature, but I've been getting into old country again, like 2000s country.
You dance drag to old country? I've been to one drag show in my life. I feel like I should go to another if they're doing country songs. Oh my gosh, I went to the White Horse last night. No one was dancing because it's Austin during South By, so we had a bunch of out-of-towners. So tell me, how do you dance drag to country?
You find the right song. Modern country is not that good. I'm not a big fan of modern country, especially because they take a lot of inspirations when really they shouldn't. When they try to stick to old country nowadays, it's kind of just a lot of the repeat of sex, beer, and trucks. And that's not entertaining. However, one artist, Ellie King, not many people know her by name, but she's the girl that did X's and O's. And like, I love that song. I don't perform a lot of country songs because, you know, yeah, they are pretty hard to do, but they are making a comeback for me personally.
Let's say I want to get involved in the drag scene, but I'm not sure where to start. What advice would you have for me? And I'm in also another redneck part of America. Is redneck an offensive term? I've been so paying attention to how I talk about pronouns and trans terms. I don't know if I'm accidentally offending. Maybe I'll get in trouble. Redneck offensive?
It's a context thing. If you're using it as like a hate term, obviously yes. But if you're using it to describe an area, I think it's fine.
We'll just say heavily conservative parts of America. Texas, Florida, Ohio, red.
I also think our terms of redneck are different because redneck for me is forest country hunting guys with beer bellies and a shotgun.
That's exactly what I mean too.
Well, I think Texas, I think desert. Getting involved with your drag community. If you want to just be a fan, go to the bars. Go to gay bars if you have any in your town. If you don't, look for those performance venues. A lot of them will do multi-shows. For example, my town, we have one venue that does a lot of bands. They have 3 shows a weekend, and a lot of it's just bands. But sometimes they also will loop in burlesque shows, drag shows, comedy nights. Keeping an eye out. Look at the bars there are in your town. See if there's any performance venues and look them up on Instagram. Find their history and see if they've ever done a drag show. If you want to become a drag queen, you have some homework to do before you start going out there. You need to know who your character is. Who do you want to be as a performer? And why do you want to do drag? If you want to do drag to be on Drag Race, then don't do drag.
Don't do it to be famous.
Doing drag to be famous is not a good thing to do. It is a long process and not really worth it. Drag is not also a sustainable thing to do. Your body can't get in drag every day until you retire at 60. There was a drag queen who I think passed away a year or two ago. She was in her 90s. She was the oldest drag queen. It's really hard to do drag when you're older because you can't perform as well as you did. It's really easy to be a drag queen and be funny, but if you're a performer and you're dancing all the time, it's harder to do drag longer. And so your retirement is more around the age of 35, if not younger. So don't do drag to be famous, but learn about local drag. take a step back. Drag Race is good to keep up with. Learn about what's happening. Learn about drag from local drag. Support local drag, because without local drag, you don't get your Drag Race. Try and find a drag mom too. Find someone who'll give you your first show. There's a lot of amateur shows where you just go, you sign up, and you perform that night. Keep an eye out for what's available. Go to your big cities. Go reach out. Do some research and try and find those outlets.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on my show. And I just want to remind everyone who's listening to this, it costs literally nothing to just be nice and not open your mouth if you don't like someone or something.
That part. And thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it. And if you don't mind, I'm going to plug myself. I am always happy to answer questions about drag. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. I have a Instagram, Raylee Saffron, R-A-Y-L-E-Y. _SAPHRON. And thank you again for having me. And I hope you got to enjoy the saffron experience.
Oh my God, that was good. Saffron experience.
Now that we said goodbye, and I'm fine.